You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06. It's a Wednesday morning, July 2nd, 2025. It's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings listening across the Civic Media Radio Network, or watching us, or listening to us on all the other platforms, the app, social media, and much more. We appreciate you being here for the middle of the week. I got a question for you. Can we just bottle this? Because I don't ski or snowmobile or ice fish or whatever. So you got the sun coming up really nice and early, pleasant temperatures. The dew point hasn't started rising yet for the day. If we could just lock this in, wouldn't that be nice? Yes, I know, I could wish in one hand, and I can't say the rest because we're on the radio. So let me just get to what's in the show for today. We're going to review the new state budget deal, perhaps best summed up as something for everybody to like and something for everybody to hate. The Joint Finance Committee passed it on Tuesday, so both the Senate and the Assembly will be in session today to consider it, and it is going to draw a mixed bag of votes. In other words, it's going to be a truly bipartisan effort and nobody gets everything that they want. So that's great, right? No, not if you talk to the people who want to vote no on it. Anyway, we'll review the latest coming up in just a bit. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C., the Senate, somewhat surprisingly, although I guess I shouldn't be too surprised that all the Republicans fell in line, they figured out, you know, who could be the three no votes and everybody else had to fold, like Ron Johnson, you know, going spelunking again, because the guy just loves caving. And so the U.S. Senate passed what would become the largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the upper class and ending of health care coverage in American history. So it's over in the U.S. House. Does that mean it's automatically going to pass out of the House and head to President Trump's desk for a signature? Not quite yet. Again, will enough Republicans fall into line? Quite possibly. There are no more John McCains in Washington, D.C., but we'll see. In our next hour, we'll talk to State Representative Angela Stroud from up north to give us the full picture of a two-part deal that will lead to the removal of more lead water lines in Superior. It required more than the single bill that was in the legislature that didn't do enough for private homeowners. And so it took Representative Stroud and some local officials to work with a private utility, and she'll give us details on the progress being made to get rid of the lead water lines in Spooner. We'll also talk to a retired pediatric nurse and school board member about the letter she sent to the WIAA, critical of their new restrictions on transgender sports participation in schools. Melissa Baldoff will be along with this week's Climate Check, including a lighter story about climate adaptation. You see, the knock on solar farms has been that all those panels would restrict crop growth or grazing. Well, this being America and all, it didn't take long for folks to get creative in ways that make the solar panels mobile and even provide shade for the cows as they graze underneath. We'll have details about that. Remember, some of you might have known we heard about it from our friends John and Gordy the other day. We'll also get updates from our Civic Media friends Earl Ingram in Southeast Wisconsin, James Kelly in Northwest Wisconsin, and Jimmy Cuska in Southwest Wisconsin. And, of course, along the way, you can certainly use that Civic Media app to send us your text messages, or you can jump in the comment sections on Facebook or YouTube. You can also email us, radio@upnorthnewswi.com, where you can also answer our question of the week from our Sunday morning newsletter, where we ask, who will be the Republican gubernatorial nominee next year? Now, the budget's almost done, so we're about to hear from Governor Tony Evers on whether he will run next year for re-election to a third term or if he's going to retire. He has not given any hint one way or the other. But regardless, who do you think the Republicans are going to run? So you can see that in our Sunday morning newsletter and also send in your response or just put it in the comment section here. So many ways to join the show. You know who else is ready to join the show? That would be Parker Olson, who's standing by in Madison. He's there. And like I said, we have civic media friends, Earl Ingram coming in, James Kelly, Jimmy Cuska, Brittany Merlot is off today, and sadly, Melissa Kay is not unable to join us as well.
I'm so upset. And
I know, we're bummed. I mean,
this has ruined my day.
This is, if there's one thing we wanted, if there's one thing we needed, it was Pigeon Quest.
It was Pigeon Quest. It was without a doubt Pigeon Quest, Pat, brings me so much joy.
It turns out that it has brought joy to others as well, to the point where, as Parker and I put together the 4th of July show so that we can sleep in on Friday, so we'll have a best of show, we had enough there. There's an entire segment dedicated to Pigeon Quest.
It's glorious.
And whether Melissa Kay will get her pigeon or not, and I thought we would learn today, but we will not. I'm very concerned.
I have faith that Paint Bucket will make it to the coop.
I hope so. I'm hoping that Paint Bucket didn't have an accident involving the Colonel's 11 herbs and spices or something like that. So
yeah, he'll get you like that.
Here is hoping. Let's see. So the holiday weekend's coming up. Going to have time to sit and relax for a little bit. It might rain at times, so there might be some indoor activities like streaming going on. And I was going to ask if you have anything new that you're streaming out there, because Sherry and I finished one series on Netflix, and we're almost done with the other. The one that we just finished was four seasons, the Tina Fey vehicle, about three couples and all the phases of life that a relationship can go through. And very nice, you know, for me and my peers. I don't know if the youngins would get much out of it, but I don't know. Maybe if you're
not
newly married.
Appeal.
Yeah, maybe if you're newly married or, you know, in contemplating a long-term relationship, maybe you should watch it and get a feel for the whole long-range view of what's out there. Because you say for better, for worse, for a reason, and you dang well better stick to it. And then the other one was The Residence, which I know a couple of folks on the show have told me about that I really needed to watch, and so we started it, and really like it. It's the one from Shonda Rhimes, and it is about the residents in the White House and a murder mystery that goes on there. Yes. And it's quirky. We've got six of the eight episodes done. We got two more to go here. And so I thought that was kind of nice. Are you streaming anything yourself these days?
I just finished Newsroom the other day.
Oh, that's right. You were going retro on the Newsroom.
Yeah, so I got to find something new. I haven't found a show to watch yet, which would be ideal because, you know, you can space out a show over more than one sitting. However, I do have a list of movies that has been growing. The wonderful and talented Luke Mathers has suggested a number of movies to me so that I understand his references. So,
yes, he does love it. He's like the Dennis Miller of civic media, the way he's dropping those pop culture references to us. So,
got a couple of those, got a couple from my radio advisor at Whitewater, which I had written down and never got around to. So, might be watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood pretty quick here.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. Tony, up in Ashland on YouTube, my wife and I watched four seasons, really liked it. We're in our 30s, we're not that old. Yeah, but you're not that young anymore either. So you were right in the target audience. Jeez. You were fine. He also says, has Pat watched The Waterboy yet? No.
Oh, Waterboy. I don't remember if that's on my list.
I'll add that to the list. And he notes that he's going to be streaming How Is This Better? Well, how convenient, Tony, for you to lead in to this fine promotion for my bosses at Courier Newsroom, the owners of Up North News, who also have several national podcasts and newsletters, including How Is This Better?, a Courier production with Akilah Hughes, covering everything from politics to entertainment to tech to late-stage capitalism. How Is This Better? Challenges the grifters who are controlling our government, our attention, and so much of our daily lives. And in one of her more recent episodes, Akilah Hughes steps into the ring with the progressive liberal. Yes, that is his real wrestling name. author Josie Reisman and journalist and former WWE writer Dave Schilling. And they all explore why politics today feels more like WWE than C-SPAN. Akilah and her guests dive into the personas, the crowd work, the heels, the faces, and how both wrestling and politics rely on performance, polarization, and pandering to win over the crowd. And if you've ever wondered why politics feels more like a reality show than real life, this is the episode for you. You can watch How Is This Better on YouTube. You can also watch or listen to it on Spotify. You can also listen to it on Apple as well. Or you can watch right from the Courier website. That's at couriernewsroom.com. And at couriernewsroom.com, again, all kinds of newsletters, podcasts, video series, and more. And How Is This Better with Akilah Hughes should be on your list of things to check out. Let's see. And Tony notes here as well. Dan Schaefer wrote about the wrestlingification of politics some time back. Time is a flat circle. Now, it's something that I've been saying for some time as well, especially since that groundbreaking moment when you watch the movie Idiocracy. And Parker, you have or haven't seen Idiocracy yet?
I have not. I am currently adding it to the list.
Get that on that little piece of paper there as well. And when you, not even long before you're done with Idiocracy, but certainly afterwards, you, well, first off, you're clinically depressed about the state of American politics. And, you know, you wonder how much longer it'll be until we have a president named Nacho Supreme or I just shudder at the thought. If you haven't watched Idiocracy yet, you have to. And then watch How Is This Better with Akilah Hughes. Then when you're done being depressed, you will understand why I keep waking up early every day to do this and why other people get out of bed to do what they do. For as literally stupid as some things are in politics, there are also some things worth fighting for. And I'm not going to butter you up and say, do it for your kids, do it for your grandkids. I love my kids. I love my grandkids. I'm doing it for me. This is not the adulthood I signed up for. And I think we all deserve better than what we've got from the likes of, you know, Ron Johnson, Mike Johnson, Derek Van Orden, and J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. Again, it's been 8 years and I'm still saying Donald Trump got elected president. But yeah, so watch the series, watch the movie, and then rededicate yourself to reaching out to your friends and neighbors. Because here's the thing. With that vote yesterday, that huge transfer of wealth that's going to close hospitals and nursing homes, and it's going to hurt so much in our economy, what were the big cable news networks talking about? The Diddy trial. Yeah. So if we're going to get any better messaging out to voters, we're going to need more outlets like Civic Media and like Up North News and all the rest from Courier Newsroom. And we're going to have to urge people to, you know, listen to our shows and to read our newsletters and to catch us on Spotify and things like that, because it's only through us getting off our duffs and talking to other people. I mean, we are the heroes we've been waiting for. We just have to get out there and do it. I know it's tiring, but we get up and we do it for the hopes of something a little bit better than what some other people have left for us. Brewers were rained out last night, so two games today. We'll talk about that coming up in just a sec. First, from the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thank you for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
So as I mentioned, the Milwaukee Brewers got rained out in New York for game one of their series against the New York Mets, and they're going to do the makeup game today. So there's going to be a split doubleheader, a day-night doubleheader today from New York. So you've got two opportunities to hear the Brewers on several Civic Media radio stations. Game one, the pregame coverage, begins at 11:35 this morning. And then for game two, come on back at 5:35 this evening for the first two games of the series with the Mets. And then they'll play again tomorrow, pregame again at 5:35 with the Brewers Mets before they head to Miami for the holiday weekend. By the way, the pitchers today, despite the rainout, Freddie Peralta will start game one, and then Jacob Mizorowski will be pitching tonight's game. So if you have not seen, do I have to say this? I guess I will. The Miz, if you want to see the Miz pitch, it's like Mizorowski. You know, I mean, I'm Polish too. I just want to emphasize the ski. The Mizorowski will be there. Yep, the ski will be there. Are you familiar with Bobby Bonilla Day?
Oh, I was so upset. I didn't realize it was Bobby Bonilla Day yesterday.
I know. I realize we missed it too, but plenty of other folks put out stories about it that reminded me to bring it up today. For folks who don't know, who don't follow sports closely, Bobby Bonilla was a former New York Met. And in the most weirdly negotiated contract in sports history, he agreed to defer a bunch of his salary if it was stretched out over a period of years. And the Mets at the time, and this is way back over a decade ago, rather than pay him $6 million, they said, how about if we pay you $1.2 million every year from 2011 to 2035? So instead of $6 million one time, it's $25 million payments every July 1st. And so every July 1st, Bobby Bonilla, who's been retired for years, gets a check for $1.2 million.
I love baseball contracts specifically because of this.
Just
he's been getting 1.2 mil for 15 years.
That was the first. Now you've got Shohei Ohtani, whose contract is going to be paid on a deferred basis until the year 2043. But the Brewers are not immune from this either. Up until Christian Yelich's $215 million contract extension 5 years ago, the richest Brewer was Ryan Braun, and back in 2011, he extended his contract through the 2020 season, and as a result of deferrals, Bobby Bonilla Day is also Ryan Braun Day. He gets $1.8 million every July 1st until 2031. Lorenzo Cain. I know you've probably forgotten Lorenzo Cain, but he's owed about $1 million a year this year, next year, and the following year for playing with the Brewers, and he's gone by now.
Boy, he was not a guy who I thought that the Brewers would be okay with doing that for.
Well, I mean, at the time, when you're hot, you're hot, I guess. And at the time, he was
very
hot enough.
Yeah,
he was. So, again, happy Bobby Bonilla Day to all who celebrate. And by all who celebrate, I mean the payroll offices of several places in Major League Baseball. All right, well, I wanted to share, if I still have it here somewhere, some of the writings of J.D. Vance. And you say, why would you do that? Because J.D. Vance cast the tie-breaking vote to allow the Senate to pass that big bloated boondoggle of a budget bill. And on it goes with all of the massive cuts to Medicaid. And, of course, because the internet is forever, some folks have dug out what J.D. Vance said 8 years ago, the last time there was a Trump tax bill that threatened cuts with Medicaid. And back then, Vance was sharply critical of Medicaid cuts, which he cast as a betrayal of Trump voters. Vance said Trump had been elected precisely because he refrained from saying, I'm going to take away your Social Security and Medicaid. In a 2017 op-ed in the New York Times, Vance argued the Republican bill would shift large numbers of people from Medicaid to the private market without ensuring they can meaningfully purchase care in the market. In other words, they'd lose coverage. And Vance suggested that Republicans must stand for some baseline provision of care to working class voters, because otherwise, you know, cuts to Medicaid would betray that principle. That was then. You know, how often do we see this, as Tony puts, Mr. Hillbilly Elegy taking Medicaid away from the people he wrote about? Yes. And again, this too is why people are so cynical on politics. Why they have soured on it is because of people like J.D. Vance, people like Lindsey Graham, who said, you know, back in the day, if we vote for Donald Trump to be president, you know, we will suffer and we will deserve it. Do you know where Lindsey Graham was last weekend? Well, do you remember, maybe you saw it in the news in St. Paul last weekend, lying in state in the Capitol was the former Speaker of the Minnesota House of Representatives, Melissa Hortman, and her husband, after being shot dead by a political terrorist. And, of course, he also wounded another legislator. And then there was the funeral. Former President Joe Biden attended the funeral. Former Vice President Kamala Harris attended the funeral, as did many other dignitaries. The President of the United States did not attend, did not send his regards. I don't even believe he sent a representative. And, of course, he insulted Minnesota's governor along the way. So you had over the weekend the split scene of this funeral going on with real leaders. And you had Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump playing golf at the time, playing golf during the funeral. I think that pretty much says it all. Let's pause here, and then in our next segment, again, occasionally we'll bring back things from our 8:30 segment in case you missed it and you had to go to work or whatever. And actually, this is a three-parter. We talked to Corrine Hendrickson about her reaction to the state budget deal and how it impacts childcare. We talked to Dan Schaefer a bit for his analysis, and State Senator Jeff Smith. We talked to him right before the end of the show about the budget deal and the trustworthiness of Republicans. We'll have all that after the Midwest Farm Report here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today's history lesson is coming up in just a little bit, and actually we'll get started later this segment with a serious note from the history books about Wisconsin's role in the Battle of Gettysburg. Tomorrow on the program, Chad Holmes, Todd Alba, Joe Zepecki, and maybe some birthday cake-flavored coffee creamer, because I want to. Maybe we'll find a reason to do that. That's all ahead. Now, as promised, yesterday we were greeted at the very top of the show by news of a new state budget agreement between Governor Evers and legislative Republicans. We've been getting reactions since that time and wanted to play back a little bit of it in case you missed it from yesterday. So first we talked to Corrine Hendrickson about child care. And just to set this up, affordable child care has been an issue for a long time. During the pandemic, Governor Evers took some of that pandemic federal relief and put it into a program called Child Care Counts, which was direct payments to support child care providers so they wouldn't close their doors, so that, you know, workers wouldn't have to leave their jobs. But legislative Republicans did not want to put any money into child care accounts. They reached a compromise, and you'll hear from Corrine the pluses and minuses of it. That's followed by a little bit of analysis from Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area, and that's followed by some comments from Eau Claire Democratic State Senator Jeff Smith. But first, we start with Corrine Hendrickson with reaction to the budget. Let's check in with Corrine Hendrickson from Nuglaris, a child care provider, a leading voice on making sure that state and federal funds don't run dry to support child care providers. The pandemic relief funding is running out, and folks were looking for state support. Republicans didn't want to give it, but Corrine, it's in there. $110 million broken up in a few different ways, and I know that you've only just seen parts of this budget deal, but thanks for joining us. And what are your very first impressions until you learn more?
So I am happy we got $110 million. That is huge. However, the fact that it's only for the first year is decimating, and it's going to be a huge problem next year. And the reason for that is it continues the status quo. So we still are not going to be able to hire teachers. We're not going to be able to raise wages. We are not going to be able to make the improvements that we needed. And that's why we asked for more. And secondly, this money will run out then in June of 2026. The way our legislative calendar runs is that next March, they gavel out to go campaign, which means there is zero chance of us getting any dollars until they come back in January. And it will be facing the exact same thing we are right now, only we'll be more tired. So the few chats I've had this morning with some people is many of them were thinking about retiring for family childcare, and we're going to hold on for like 2-3 more years if we got the funding. However, now that it's only 1 year, they will be done next year. I talked to people who have young children of their own in family childcare, and they were going to try and stick it out and would have stayed once their youngest went to school. They will now be done next summer. So all we're doing is pushing it down the road a year.
I wonder if, and I have no information that tells me one way or the other, but I wonder if in doing this, like you noted, they will gavel out probably in March of 2026 and go campaign. But they're going to have to campaign on the issue of childcare funding that just ran out. And I wonder if that actually doesn't increase the pressure that somewhere between next January and next March, they throw another supplemental amount in there. Again, it's not nearly the stability of putting the budget in, but it does seem like an interesting opportunity to pressure some of these lawmakers early next year as well.
Yeah, it would be an interesting opportunity. However, it's been 5 years of this and we're all really, really tired. I don't know how many of us are just going to decide between now and then we're done, because we can't keep going at this rate, especially if, you know, we work really hard to get people into office that said that they would do these things for us and that they would fight for this. And then to have it be so short-sighted that it ends like with no chance. So the next ask now is to have that standalone legislation passed to get the rest of the money in. And some of the other things that I saw in the press release, some good things, they're increasing the subsidy so that it's up to the legal requirement right now for based off of this year's rates. However, when our rates go up, we'll be back in non-compliance. So they didn't add enough to actually make it go forward to get into compliance and remain in compliance. They did it in order to backfill to then say we're in compliance right now. Another really good thing I saw was that they're going to be adding, in addition to the Young Star bonus for children on subsidy, if you are higher rated, there will also be a separate bonus for children that are infants and toddlers, so that we would get a little bit more for them. And that's a good thing, because we can't charge enough for those infants and toddlers. And that might help with some of that infant toddler squeeze that we're feeling. So those are some good things I saw. I have a couple questions about the 4K school readiness piece. If it's at the 0.6 full-time equivalent that the schools have, we can't compete with that. If free all day school, 0.6 for us, parents aren't going to be able to pay us the difference, especially since we're not getting the stabilization funding that we need in order to reduce our tuition. So that's really not probably going to do what it's intended to do. I have some major concerns about the ratios changing, pilot programs, and the devil's in the details. I have asked. I got a little bit of clarification from the Department of Children and Families, but they know about what we do. They haven't seen the language, so they don't actually know. Same thing, 16-year-olds counting as a teacher in a classroom is also very, very, very concerning.
Corrine Hendrickson with a first look at reaction to the budget deal that was reached yesterday. Obviously more to learn and then more to react to. But Corrine, thanks for a first pass at it. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Let's get right into it from the recombobulation area. One Dan Schaefer. Here we are, ready for a day like today. How are you?
I'm doing well. A little discombobulated this morning, but we're piecing things back together, and always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Wrightlow.
Always nice to have you here as well. For the time that you've had to look at it, what's your own 30,000-foot view of what they have created here? And will it be a case of good enough, or will it be a case of perfect is the enemy of the very good?
Well, you're right. It's there's a lot of information to parse here. And I think one of my big takeaways from this is that I think they are going to require Democratic votes in the state Senate to pass the budget for the first time in, I don't know, more than 15 years now, right? And so with that, with, as I reported last week on Civic Media, with state Senate Minority Leader Dianne Hesselbein being brought into negotiations, I think that changed the dynamic of the deal being struck in some pretty significant ways. We're seeing, you know, increases for special education reimbursement. We're seeing increases to the UW system, a number of other areas that are being addressed in the budget. And I don't know how much of that would have happened had they not reached a certain level of impasse, and that The Republicans needed some Democratic votes in order to pass the budget in the state Senate. So I do think that is one of the big takeaways here, is that the smaller Republican margins in the state Senate that were achieved in part through the fair maps, in part through a number of tough electoral victories won last fall by people like Jody Habersh-Senekin, who won in a really close race, a number of other state senators, Jamie Wall, Chris Alfheim, and go down the list there to kind of shrink the gap and make this a bill that had input from Senate Democrats, from Tony Evers, and then from legislative Republican leadership as well, and Robin Voss and Devin LeMahieu. So we'll still, I'm sure there will be plenty of questions, there always are, on anything this big. But I think one of my initial big takeaways is that fair maps, tough elections, leading to a bipartisan compromise in the state Senate. And I think that's a pretty big deal.
All right. Well, let's bring in Senator Jeff Smith now from the Eau Claire County town of Brunswick, joining us here from what appears to be your Capitol office, Senator.
That's right, Pat. And, hey, you know, Dan, thanks for saying that. The good ideas are coming from Democrats. We take a lot of beating these days that we're not fighting back, but considering we aren't in control, the best thing we can do is keep reminding them of what the public really wants.
All right. Well, let's get the 3-minute version of what you think. When did you find out most of the points, and what's your general view of the whole schmear?
Well, we've been getting breadcrumbs, tidbits through the last weekend and through yesterday, and we're going to find out. We haven't yet to see the whole budget. So, to tell you the truth, after all these years of lack of trust, I have to see the whole budget to know what's real and what's not. There have been concessions made, or I should say compromises made, you know, and there will be votes coming from Democrats to bail out the Republicans and get this done, because after all, we've got to make sure that we get that hospital funding that is being held over our head by the feds. This has to get done in a timely fashion. Unfortunately, that timely fashion has really passed, and the Republicans have really manipulated this whole system to put us in a bad spot where we have 24 hours to look at a 900-page document and then vote on it.
It's a very good point. And then on top of that, you've got the state Supreme Court ruling on light item vetoes last week that, as I explained last week, has me concerned that the Joint Finance Committee, the Republicans there, can just put immense amounts of cash in their so-called supplemental fund and then micromanage the dollars as they see fit. But until you see the whole bill, you have no idea if there's going to be that funding for Chippewa Valley Healthcare to make up for the hospitals. That is still to be seen one way or the other?
Thanks for bringing that up, because that supplemental funding, we're supposed to trust them at this point that they will release monies for these important pieces like that. I don't anymore. I don't trust them anymore. They've proven themselves to not care and not be willing to release funding when it's needed. So this is a bad way of governing. They obviously can't govern, don't know how to govern, and I'm just telling them, get out of the way, because some of us do know and do care.
And then just a couple of seconds here, Dan Schaefer mentioned it. I just want your quick affirmation on this. Fair maps is what got us a more fair budget, not a great budget, but a fair budget because of fair maps, yes or no?
It's competitive maps, and yes, it did.
Okay. Senator Jeff Smith from the Eau Claire County town of Brunswick. Thank you, my friend. Good to see you.
Thank you.
So there you go. There's a summary of some of the reaction to the state budget bill, which, again, passed out of the Joint Finance Committee yesterday with only one no vote. That was from Senator LaTanya Johnson of Milwaukee. It got a yes vote from Senator Kelda Royce of Madison in Joint Finance, but she is not fully committing to voting yes on the bill yet. And I believe you will see a mix of Democrats and Republicans on both sides of that bill. All right, I want to note that we are in the middle of the anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg during the Civil War of 1863, one of the bloodiest battle in American military history, and that when tens of thousands of Confederate troops crossed the Potomac into Pennsylvania, they were met by 80,000 Union soldiers, including Wisconsin's Iron Brigade. They were in the thick of battle on the first day. The 2nd Infantry lost about a third of its men right from the start, including Colonel Lucius Fairchild, He would later recover from his injuries and the loss of his left arm and be elected governor of Wisconsin right after the war. The village of Fairchild in Eau Claire County is named for him. The 26th Wisconsin Infantry, composed almost entirely of immigrants from Germany, fought throughout the day and lost more than 200 men. The first U.S. sharpshooters, originally organized to Camp Randall, were instrumental in repulsing Confederate attacks, including Pickett's charge on the third day. All told, the state of Wisconsin provided just over 90,000 men for service in the Union Army during the Civil War. Between battle dead and other causes, 12,301 men from Wisconsin died defending this nation. And that would explain why anytime I see a Confederate flag anywhere in this state, I would love to tell them how they can take their flag and their BS about heritage and cram it up someplace I can't talk about on radio. So on this anniversary of Wisconsin's sacrifice in the Civil War, we wanted to say that some of us remember. Today's history lesson is next, as we always do, mornings here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wandering in the night.
See, now that's probably the Frank Sinatra voice you're used to. A few days ago, we played like his debut with the Harry James Orchestra. He sounded a lot younger back then. But this is his Strangers in the Night, which was the number one song this day in 1966. And it would later win the Oscar for Best Song in a Movie, again, 59 years ago today. I talked about Gettysburg before, but this is also a big anniversary for the American Revolution. It was on this day that the Continental Congress adopted a resolution severing ties with the Kingdom of Great Britain, although the wording of the formal Declaration of Independence was not adopted until July 4th. Sounds very typical of government. We adopt the framework one day, and we'll work out the details. It might take a day or two.
Bill done by July 4th, dang it.
Yes. I don't think the demand was the same back then, but it could be. On this day in 1962, Jimi Hendrix was honorably discharged from the U.S. Army after serving only about a year of his three-year commitment. The reason for his discharge was unsuitability, as his superiors agreed that he will never be a good soldier, in part because he was more interested in his guitar than his rifle. I guess that paid off.
It's good to be bad at your job sometimes, I guess.
That's exactly it. Winning by losing, you know? Let's see. The number one song this day in 1988 was by Michael Jackson. This Dirty Diana made him the first artist to score five number one singles from the same album. This was the fifth number one single from the album Bad. Born this day in 1908, Thurgood Marshall, the 32nd Solicitor General of the United States, who then became a former Associate Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. First black justice, trailblazer, passed away in 1993. On this day in 1964, as part of the Civil Rights Movement, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to prohibit segregation in public places. On this day in 1980, Sheena Easton was featured on a BBC show called The Big Time. She had a big hit 2 months later. So the show she was on, The Big Time, followed regular people trying to achieve their dreams with visions of stardom as a singer. You see her in the show auditioning for EMI, and they were impressed by her voice. And this is the record that came 2 months later.
I did not know when I saw 9 to 5 in our notes here. I was thinking,
Dolly Parton?
Yeah, I was thinking that. And then I heard this. And yes. I only know this song from that episode of Seinfeld.
Do you really? Of course you do.
I think so.
Of course you do. Let's see. On this day in 1937, Amelia Earhart and navigator Fred Noonan are last heard from over the Pacific Ocean, attempting to make the first equatorial around the world flight. They were also searching for that Malaysian Air Flight 357. Because that's just how it operates. It's in some weird devil's triangle space. The first Walmart store opened for business in Rogers, Arkansas on this day in 1962. So happy 63rd birthday to Walmart. Michelle Branch has a birthday today. You know, that nice young singer who had Everywhere. That song was a while ago. She's 42 years old today. More birthdays. Let's see. We've got actress Margot Robbie is 35 years old today. Lindsay Lohan is 39 years old today. And Larry David is 78 years old today. And here's something that will always surprise people. I just never got into Curb Your Enthusiasm and Larry David.
I've never seen Curb Your Enthusiasm. That should be what I watch.
Get that on your list. Get that list out. How big is this list now?
It's probably got like... that's about 10 movies or so.
Okay. All right. Today is look at this list, National Lint Awareness Day. I'm aware of lint every time I open the drawer. I don't need a day for this.
I need details. I need to know why that's a thing.
This is World Sports Journalism Day. And perhaps most notably, and we don't have any tunage for it, but in New Zealand, today is National Disco Day. A salute to all things music, dancing, and the culture of the 1970s. I still love New Zealand anyway. That's fine. And Luke Mathers is on the text line. He is flabbergasted that I did not get into Curb Your Enthusiasm. How do I put this? For the same reason I didn't get deep into Seinfeld. Sometimes, you can be funny, but sometimes they're just mean. Sometimes they're just not very nice people.
I mean,
I like nice people who are funny, you know.
Fair enough, I suppose. Yeah, I get that.
I'm just saying that's my own quirk. That's my own problem. I own it, you know. So, here's Tony on YouTube having fun with the Michelle Branch song. Lint is everywhere to me. When I open my dryer, it looks at me. And then there's a CT8325 on YouTube saying disco rules, and Tony is with me on this. He says, I tried at least 3 times, couldn't do Curb Your Enthusiasm. Hmm. So, I mean, these are all acquired tastes. You know, Tony is also like me. He didn't get big into Seinfeld either. It doesn't mean when I pop in, I get the things that are funny. You know, I mean, Seinfeld, for example, you know, the one with the bet, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know? Alicia asking, isn't this Lasagna Awareness Month?
Oh,
oh my goodness. Could it
interesting.
Be?
Interesting.
Oh shoot! Let's see how much.
I like
let's
that
see how
idea.
Much, yeah.
So you know what Googling day can, today yes. is, Pat?
What?
It's National I Forgot Day.
Oh, and you're going? Oh, did you forget Pigeon Quest? It's Wednesday. No, Melissa Kay's under the weather. So
no.
I know. So we'll have to wait one more week to get an update on Pigeon Quest. Yes, July is Lasagna Awareness Month. We'll mark more about that next week. Time for the news next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.